Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everybody. This is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
I want short answers. I know these are big subjects, but I want short answers because we haven't got too much time left. But James Lawler has asked two questions. Should the ECB directly employ ground staff to improve county pitches, kind of make the pitch preparation independent and try and make them as good as they can possibly be? Mark?
No, they shouldn't need to do that. They need to have a proper policy and proper guidelines about what they expect. They shouldn't be, we shouldn't have a nanny kind of ECB employing 18 groundsmen up and down the country. We shouldn't need to do that.
Phil?
Yeah, I agree. Teams should be able to prepare a pitch to their own team's advantage, but it has to meet certain basic requirements that ensure that you're going to have a pitch that lasts long enough.
I disagree with both of you. I think they should be centrally contracted. I think they should be taken away from the counties and report to the ECB and report to the pitch inspectors, because if you actually have them employed by the counties themselves, you get in captains and coaches in the ears all the time. Basically, we need a green top because that team can't play. Yeah, and you end up dumbing down and you get result pitches, not necessarily the best pitches.
Well, it's not if you have the necessary sanctions, you don't. You stick to them. And guidelines.
We want to run get the game so it actually produces the right result in the first place, not so we have to fine everybody for not doing it.
Hmm. Well, they prepared good enough pitches for about 12 years in county cricket without. Anyway, I mean, I see your point, James.
What structure should the county championship be? Franchise, like Jonathan Agnew said today, this is a massive subject. Jonathan Agnew's 10-team, 8-team structure, like franchises, same as now, three divisions or back to three-day cricket in one division or back to two divisions, I guess that's the one thing that James Lawler's missed out there. I'll go first on this one. I think, Mark, you've said to me many times, it should be the best player in the best. I agree with that. I want to see 18 counties retained because I think that spreads the tentacles of the game around the country. If you end up with, I mean, as the 100 is, it's seven basically centres of population. If you live 100 miles away from there, what's encouraging you to go to your nets at the local county, whatever it would be called? Three divisions of six in the championship, make the top division the Premier League, and you give it a little bit more of priority. I don't mind white ball getting priority, but I want the red ball to get the same priority. Have red and white stripes throughout the summer, as I keep saying. And I think I'm not against, actually. I've kind of thought about this a lot because initially I kind of backtracked a little bit, but I'm not against having some kind of regional structure across the top of that, even if it's just for 3 weeks in the summer, where the best of the East and West and the North and the South, or however you separate the regions out, play each other at a higher level in between county and Test cricket. I think that actually probably adds a little bit. I can see, I'm not against change at all, but I need to see that change is actually going to lead to something. Jonathan Agnew's change of bringing in 10 new teams that are going to go above the 18 other teams. It just seems to complicate everything and doesn't actually make any difference.
I think Jonathan Agnew is living in a... I think he's been behind a microphone living in a kind of reality for too long. No, not franchise first-class cricket. I think, from my perspective, I want the best playing the best. I think it's too complicated to reduce the counties, so I would retain 18. I would want a regional structure under the 18 counties. So I would actually stick with two divisions, and then I would have had five regional games. I would cut a one-day. I would cut a one-day competition out. I'd cut the 50 over out to make more room for red ball cricket.
Could you make it a knockout so it doesn't take up so many days?
Or a knockout, one or the other. I would make it that to play test match cricket, you would have to be picked for your regional side. And I would give financial incentives to play regional cricket and red ball cricket. And you would pick your test match players on the basis of their performances in regional cricket. So the actual county system can carry on. It's a feeder for the test match arena. But actually, you want to see the best playing the best, not just through the county cricket, but through this regional structure. Imagine if you had, for example, Somerset and Gloucester combined with Glamorgan, playing Yorkshire, Lancashire and Durham combined. Look at the strength of the sides we'd have there. Because one of the things we don't get in county cricket these days, and I think this is an important point to make, and I think this is also a reflection of the standards, we don't get the consistent quality of overseas players. We don't get the amount of cold packs and South Africans coming to qualify like we did in the 70s, 80s, 90s. That doesn't exist anymore. And that kind of brushed over some of the kind of quality issues of the past. Because let's face it, we've been having these conversations for a long time. That's all gone. We're living in a new reality. So if we live in that new reality, we have to have something better so players can test themselves against each other. They're not facing Wasim Akram, Patrick Patterson, Alan Donald, Wayne Daniel, Sylvester Clark, Sakli Mushtaq,
Mark, we can list the greats of the county cricket forever. Let's move on to Phil. The only trouble with the regional thing, Phil, is that North is always going to beat you guys down south, isn't it? But I mean, I guess that's a problem to deal with then. How do you see, I mean, you heard what I said, Mark's kind of very similar, I think, to what I've said. Finally, me and Mark are actually kind of aligning on this. Are you coming with us, Phil?
Yeah, I am. I was going to say, I think who did we hear it from? 2 or 3 weeks ago, this came up. And I have to say, the idea immediately grabbed me as something that would add that level of quality that we needed to try and steal our younger players a bit more. So yeah, I don't think I can add anything meaningful to what you guys have said. It would.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll go to the next question then, Phil. You can have first dibs on this one. Ollie, who's one of our regulars on this, says, do England need to split the red ball and white ball coaches? Do we need to have two separate things? I mean, I've always thought of, well, increasingly thinking of Red Bull and White Bull as almost two separate sports. Two separate coaches makes sense to me. Phil, what about you?
It does make sense, but there needs to be a real... If you're going to have two different coaches, there perhaps needs to be someone operating between them as, you know, to that Giles role still to keep them working with each other, and because there's got to be some overlap. So I see the merits of two separate coaches, but given that you would have an overlap of personnel and you need to keep therefore the use and development of those players overseen in some way, there needs to be a bridge between the pair.
A bit of joined up thinking is what you basically
joined
saying,
up thinking is what I'm struggling to say. Yes, James. Yeah. It's but yeah, in principle, I mean, I think they are. The demands on the players now seem to be so different that it does make sense. And if white ball players now are essentially deemed unlikely to get into a red ball team, then there seems to be less reason for a single coach, I think is what I'm saying.
Mark, yes or no?
Yeah, of course you should have separate coaches for the two different formats, white and red, and you should have a national selector again and a different structure to pick the sides.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com
quote the discount code Badger. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls.
Going back to something I was tweeting about earlier, I mean, the Agnew thing made me angry, actually, this morning. I was in a bit of a tither. I actually stopped myself from tweeting immediately after I saw it, because I am prone to actually jumping in with my heart rather than my head. I thought, right, I'll have a few hours to think about this. And then I was still angry, so I tweeted. But I'll read you out my tweet. I'll read you out my tweet. I responded to that. I try to ignore it, the Jonathan Agnew tweet, because it makes me angry. Jonathan Agnew's suggestion that the counties should be trimmed down is utter boop. Now is not the time to reduce the opportunities. It's time to strengthen what we've got, spread the game around the country and be proud of it. Not to think that Zach Crawley is the future because he averaged 27, or pick Rory Burns because he played two nice shots in the fifth test. He looked a mess. The bar has to be higher. Let's grow the game we love. Give kids opportunities to beat Australia next time or in 20 years' time. Yes, have three championship divisions so the best play the best. Even have a layer of regional matches above the championship. Play more Lions fixtures. I can see those changes actually add something. The way to thrive and grow is not to take cricket and chances away from people and effectively shrink the game. A few people came back to me and said, well, the championships doesn't get any spectators. We're spreading the game too thin across 18 counties, blah, 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 blah. I came back to that with, for those of you telling me that there isn't enough talent in the country and 18 counties spreads the game too thin, a couple of suggestions. Let's put our efforts into finding kids from beyond public schools, and let's make cricket genuinely inclusive so players of colour thrive and they come through as well. That, you know, if you actually find some people from state schools, and if you find a few players of colour out there and they're good, they add to the quality, Phil.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. I don't think there's much of an argument. I don't personally think there's much of an argument for diminishing the county structure. I think that's the bandwagon that's currently being jumped on, and I can understand why you're angry about it. You've heard me say this before, that there is a public school bias in what goes on. We are missing the vast, vast majority of the population doesn't go to private school, isn't privately educated. And there must be a pool within that part of the community that is able to produce top quality cricketers for us once they're introduced to the game and once they learn to love it. Because at the moment, we don't have the best branding. That's what the 100's all about. It's about trying to attract kids. And I'm not sure that necessarily succeeds, but we'll see, because we're stuck with that. But the sport needs to introduce a new source of finding talent. And for me, the most obvious source is state schooling. And the reality is that you're more likely to find budding cricketers in the South Asian community at the moment, because the sport is just loved in that part of the world, and that's been brought with the immigration from that part of the world with them to this country. If we don't tap into that resource in a meaningful way, we are effectively denying ourselves the opportunity to find a rich vein of talent within that part of the community. So,
well, it's basically tantamount to negligence, isn't it, if we're actually not ploughing that furrow?
Yeah, it can't. I mean, I don't think I've set out anything that requires rocket science levels of intellect to work out. It's basic. The bigger your talent pool, the more chances you have of finding the talent.
Warwickshire opened their doors and had sort of public trials. You know, if you think you've got a chance, come down to our nets and let's have a look at you. I know Goffey and Yorkshire are going to do something similar. I think those kind of open trials where anybody can come along, you know, white, whatever colour, you know, from any background, and show what they can do. And if they look half decent, they come back again and potentially ultimately get into the system. Mark, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. And I mean, Lancashire do a similar thing. I mean, we've actually got quite a good... I think state schools are an interesting point. I think it's quite difficult to get into state schools because of the nature of state schools at the moment.
Mark, you're in education. Why can we trust a sector of education that basically is known as public schools, but then they say they're privately educated? But kind of, well, how does that make sense? Anyway, that's a totally different conversation.
I mean, I think that it's actual clubs that counties need to work with far more closely. Lancashire have done that quite well. So every player of Lancashire is affiliated to a local club. And they have links with them. They go down, they do coaching, they do this or the other. And we've got quite a good youth development network in the county. Most of our professional staff do actually come from state backgrounds. We do have a link now with Sedbergh School, but most of our people at Bohannon through the state sector, you know, Jimmy Anderson, all of them come through the state sector. So I actually think it's very important that clubs work proactively with local cricket clubs to get people interested in the games. Because the idea you're going to start playing cricket in state schools consistently of a good level, I don't think is going to happen. Football, those types of things. But local clubs have the facilities. It's a, you know, local, yeah. And it's about getting the right structure in your county club to work with them. I've no issue with 18 counties continuing. I've always said I just want to improve the quality. Now, if that means that we have three divisions and Derbyshire and Leicestershire are in the third division for eternity, fine, because if they produce players, they will graduate to the first division where financial incentives will be greater. It will be a free market in that sense. So my priority is obviously to get more people playing cricket, but actually to improve the quality of what we play at the domestic level.
I think that's the key. That's the key, Mark. That's what I think as well. Is, you know, rather than neglect it and kind of say, well, that's not working, so we'll take our eyes off it and ignore it. Actually invest in it and actually make it better, make it stronger, attract more players to it and actually build it up so it actually serves its purpose in the future rather than actually just throw it away and think, oh, let's have 10 franchises. And then 10 years' time, we'll be changing their mind again. And well, that isn't the way to do it. Actually take the solid structure we've got and make it even stronger.
One more thing I'd like to say about that. You know, county cricket in England has strong historical roots.
Yeah.
It is about producing England players, and it's become more so because that's where the money comes from. But it has strong social roots based in communities. So therefore, if you start taking that lifeblood away, you aren't the same affiliation anyway. You'll have more distance from the clubs. And that's why I said it's much more important that county clubs engage more with their local structures to develop talent.
Yeah.
If you do that, it's better than some ridiculous franchise.
Absolutely agree. I've just looked in my face and I've got bags under my eyes from all this Ashes coverage. I need to get some sleep over the next few weeks. I really do.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger podcast.
To finish off with, well, just a point before we get to the final, I saw Joe Root in the nets ahead of the last test match. Some kids watching, gave them his gloves and went and gave him a little impromptu little coaching session. When he walked off after his final innings of the series, there were some kids near the boundary exit and he threw his gloves to them as well. Little things like that, Phil. And I know from when I'm going back a long time here, but from when I was a kid with my autograph book waiting for players, if they gave you a good word and they said something to you and you remembered that and you walked away thinking, oh, he's a nice guy. And that makes that, it's that kind of thing that really sparks the interest in youngsters, isn't it? You know, if you get a little bit of time and just even just one sentence from a player that you admire or that you've seen out there doing their stuff, that burns into you and actually that inspires, isn't it?
It's a touch of class. It really is from Root. And it doesn't cost much in terms of time and energy, but it can have such a profound effect on the youngster involved. And yeah, you're right. It will inevitably, it will have an effect on those affected. And the more he does it, the further it will go and the more likely those individuals are to stay in the game, be interested and develop. How often do we see footage of, you know, a young, you know, an up and coming footballer that was training with somebody when they were a kid and you get footage of them as a 9 or a 10 year old and they've had that time with a pro at the time. It definitely can help. And it's a real sign of the class act that Joe Root was, bearing in mind the crushing pressure that he's been under, to still have that awareness that just sense of your professional pride to still have that ability to see there's a couple of kids, I can still look after them, even though I've just received that absolute stinker.
I'll tell you what, with Rooty, whether people out there think he should stay as captain or not, seem to think there's quite a bit of support from him, mainly because people can't see an alternative. I've never seen anybody say anything other than he's a really good bloke, and he is a really good bloke. Having known him at Yorkshire, he's a really good bloke, and his heart is in the right place. Everybody needs a hero, Mark, don't they?
Do they? Yeah, I mean, yeah, Joe Root is a nice guy.
I mean, you don't know. There's always, you know, that phrase where they say there's always somebody worse off than you. Well, ultimately, there is somebody right at the bottom of that pile. In that phrase, everybody needs a hero. You're right at the top, so there's nobody for you to look up to, is there? Really?
Well, that's right. I'm sitting here in my premiering room, so I'm right at the top of the tree. But Joe Root is a nice guy. He comes across as a really articulate young man, as I said before. I don't think he's the right captain for England, and it's nothing to do with Root personally. I just don't think he's the right captain at this point in time. I think his race is run. But I think
let's go through some of the characters at the top of the tree here. Joe Root, should he remain as England captain? James says yes. Phil?
No, I think I'd leave him in just batting.
Who would you replace him with?
I pondered on your James Vince solution and I'm warming to it.
Mark, no. Who would you replace him with?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? There's no alternative.
Well, there you go.
At the moment, I've got absolutely no idea. Possibly James Vince, if they want to have a bit of a left field selection. I know Sam Billings put his hand up, but I don't think that's a goer, really. Vince could be...
Sam Billings is another good example of somebody that shouldn't even been anywhere near that squad, but was in Australia, so they called him up because he had some wicket-keeping gloves with him, and he played quite well, so all of a sudden he's the future.
Yeah, he's the Twitter future, isn't he? But James Vince, maybe. I mean, we're a pile of state, aren't we? So... Yeah, but I mean, it's not my salary level to pick the next England captain. That's why we have all these. That's why Giles is the supremo, isn't he?
We're coming to him in a second. He might not, depending on your votes, he might not be in charge soon. Chris Silverwood, head coach, is he the right man to continue? I'm saying not. Phil?
It depends if and when Mags goes off to Yorkshire. Because he might be the right man for England until such time.
I don't think Max is going to Yorkshire. I think Max is staying at Essex. So
is he staying there? Right then. Well, genuinely, what I was thinking. To be honest, it's come to a point with Silverwood where there can't be another individual with more insight into the problems England has.
What you're saying is you're giving him the chance to actually put it right.
I think I am. I'm giving him the chance to put it right on the basis that you have that old banger of a car. You know what's wrong with it, and you know what you need to do to sort it out, as opposed to buying a new second-hand car that you don't know what's wrong with it. That's the analogy I'm drawing. I think Silverwood must now, having been through this absolute horror, is well-placed to see exactly what's wrong, and he might well... be the man to, having like done half the job is identifying the problems. The next problem is now identifying how to solve them. I think hopefully he's halfway there.
Well, hopefully then he's a good swimmer, because I've got him actually swimming back and not in the plane. Mark, it's one vote no from me. It's one vote yes from Phil. You have the casting deciding vote. Should Chris Silverwood stay in the job?
I think, as I said last week, I think he's very lucky that we've got a tour coming up very shortly. I think logistically to start replacing him now might be quite difficult and, you know, more disruptive than it's worth and not fair on a new coach coming in. So just by default, I think he gets a chance in the West Indies. And I do like, I don't like the idea of this kind of knee-jerk sacking. He's made mistakes. I want him to admit he's made mistakes and see if he can put it right. Because
I totally agree with that, because I'll tell you what I think. All too often, people get very defensive. They go into this bunker mentality and they kind of deny, and they kind of try and play it as if they've done everything okay. I think as members of the public, as supporters, we can actually see the human side of this, and we can actually value somebody coming out and say, actually, I don't think I got that right. I'm going to get it right next time. People respect that.
I think I would have more respect for people who did that. That's why I didn't like Giles's conversation or interview last week.
Well, let's talk about Ashley Giles. So we'll start with you, Mark. Should Ashley Giles be in a job?
Of all the ones who are vulnerable, I would say Giles is, in my opinion, the most vulnerable, because he's actually the leader and the boss. He's put together these structures. He's decided on this plan of action. How can he, and I think the issue for Giles is the interview last week, and it's very important as a leader. We've seen it in our own so-called leaders recently. It's very important for a leader to have credibility. When he did that interview last, whenever it was a simple denial of any form of, you know, I've made a mistake, guys. I've done the wrong thing. It was harking back to the 90s. It was defensive. It was saying, well, we need to reform first-class cricket, when he's known damn well for years we've needed to reform it, and he's gone along with it. He's put this structure in place. How can he now go back and say, I want a red ball and a white ball captain? How can you now go back and say, I need a national selector? You've got no, you can't do that as a leader. So I think Giles has to go.
Phil, Ashley Giles.
I think having pinned my colours to the mast of allowing Silverwood the opportunity to remedy, identify and remedy his errors, I think it would be churlish of me not to give Giles the same opportunity. I take on board everything Mark says. He's absolutely the most, I think he's the most culpable of those involved. But if we are to work on the basis, you allow some of the opportunity to constructively criticise their own work and to learn from it, there is nobody in a better position than he to analyse his own work, review it, and make some drastic improvements.
I'm torn, to be honest, on Ashley Giles. I think there's a great danger at the end of this Ashes series. There's going to be this report. I understand Andrew Strauss is going to be floating around somewhere in this process. Tom Harrison's going to be signing this report off. Ashley Giles is going to be writing his bits. Chris Silverwood, Joe Root, I'm sure, will be writing their bits as well. I think there's a grave danger that they will just be protective of their own parts to play in this. I would guarantee Tom Harrison will not want anything to be written badly about the 100 in this report. I can guarantee Ashley Giles will basically say he's done everything right and COVID was an awful problem. We all know that already. I think there's a danger in that, because if you're going to actually make proper changes and you're going to move forward in a constructive, positive way, you've got to be truthful in these things. If you're having a post-mortem, you've got to be truthful. And I'm not so sure that this report is going to actually be worth the paper it's written on by the end of it. I'm going to basically, you've already voted me in a job, so my vote doesn't count. So I'm going to sit on the fence on him.
No. Go on, crack on.
I'd oust him. I mean, if he came to it, gun to head, I would actually oust him, because I think he has been responsible for all this. And I think, as Mark said, I think his interview was awful. It was basically almost saying, well, it's his fault. None of it's my fault. And I don't like that. And I want him to actually, like I said, I actually respect people for saying that they've got something wrong. I think, yeah, everybody gets something wrong. Nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. Ashley Giles, Chris Silverwood, Joe Root are no different. And it's actually productive if you actually admit your errors, I think, along the way. As long as not everything you do is an error, it's productive that you admit it.
And I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
Let's finish off with another name. Tom Harrison is at the top of the tree as the chief executive of the ECB. He's come under fire. He's come out recently and said that Test cricket is the pinnacle. We need to reset Test cricket and we need to make sure that we give it the full gusto. He probably said something very similar 4 years ago. He's been in charge for 7 years. He's the man that brought in the 100, which I think is one of the coconuts on the shy that's basically is knocking off Test cricket, not actually producing Test cricketers. I think Tom Harrison's tenure, I think what he says on inclusivity, by the way, and that's one thing that we haven't mentioned in all of this stuff about changing cricket and trying to, you know, change the domestic system and what have you, you know, in terms of inclusivity, bring that into everything as well, because that's an important thing. It shouldn't be overshadowed by, you know, the post-mortem after the Ashes. Racism in cricket and everything that came of that has to stay front and centre as well. But Tom Harrison's been around for a long time, made a lot of decisions. I watched George DeBell's last thing on the cricketer, his thing, and he was saying, he says it's the pinnacle of the game, but none of his actions have actually suggested that that's actually what he really believes. I think Tom Harrison, if he's not in Last Chance Saloon, he's heading out the exit door of it. I can't see a future for Tom Harrison unless he does something drastic and really starts to put his money where his mouth is. Phil?
I don't know enough about him, to be brutally honest. In terms of what he said, you wouldn't disagree with anything he said. I mean, apart from the 100, I appreciate you disagree with, but the 100, and I'm no fan of it, the 100 hasn't caused what's happened in Australia, but the move, this winter.
Yeah, this is what a lot of people keep saying to me. The 100 is too new to have caused this. Yeah. But the drive towards the 100 and the change in mentality towards white ball cricket that has led to the 100 is what's caused this.
Yeah, but players are playing the game that they're playing. And if the idea is that the 100, you know, removes resources, attention, players from playing the longer form of the game, then there's no evidence to suggest that that's had it's had enough time to do that yet. It might well aggravate matters and make things much worse. I think it's premature, and it does your argument no favours to pray that in aid of it at the moment, because it's just too soon to say the hundreds.
What I'm saying, though, Phil, is that if you are Tom Harrison and you're saying that test cricket is the pinnacle, and then the next thing you do is you throw the 100 into the middle of the peak month of the season where everybody's playing white ball cricket and county championship cricket goes invisible, that isn't saying that test cricket is the pinnacle. As George DeBell, I heard his interview on TMS where he said the 100 is the turd in the middle of the room that the rest of cricket is walking around. I like that analogy. I think that sums it up nicely. And I think if you're Tom Harrison, there is no evidence in anything that he's done, which actually backs up his assertion that Test cricket is the pinnacle.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're not in the room. Was that to Mark? Sorry, Mark.
Well, yeah, Mark can come in.
Yeah, Tom Harrison has to go. He is the chief strategist. He says, I mean, we've had interviews with him in the summer where he's just come across as totally just anemic interviews. And the idea he's got, the pinnacle of the game. He's overseen a cultural change in English cricket, which has been has gone too far, and it's been detrimental. He's also not been a great strategist. He doesn't know a huge amount about the game. You know, he employed Ashley Giles. He's responsible to a certain degree for the cosy culture that now exists for some England players. These guys are getting paid $7 million. £1 million contracts if they are a multi-format player. He's developed this kind of almost too cosiest culture from a high.
I guarantee you, Mark, because the IPL now stretches to the end of May. I guarantee you, Tom Harrison will not recall any of those England players before the end of May.
It's almost become player power. It's become too cosy. And Harrison has overseen that cultural shift. You need somebody with knowledge of the game. You don't have to be a played professional cricket to have jobs in cricket, I don't think. But to be that at that level, you have to have some knowledge of the game. And I don't think he has great knowledge of the game. I also don't think he's a great strategist. And I also think the cultural changes that have been brought about have been detrimental. So for me, him with Giles as the leaders, let's not be chopping down them people below. Let's actually say that when you're leading an organisation, it's actually the leaders that set the tone. And if we're in a situation of crisis, then it's the leadership you have to look at. And that is the same in any business or sport. That's it. End of story in my book.
That's the reshuffle then. Some are going, some are staying. I've got our best wishes for the next 4 years. Next few months, West Indies is important away as well. We've got a summer of cricket coming up. They're important test matches too. But obviously the Ashes is mentioned at the end of most Australian and English people's sentences. I mean, one final point before we say goodbye and say goodbye to this Ashes, which has been a torrid, torrid watch, hasn't it, at times. I saw a video today of the Australian guys in a bar in Australia, and obviously in Australia, Nathan Lyon lifting the vase, the Ashes urn trophy up, and they were singing We Are The Champions. It had to be an English song, didn't it, they were singing? But We Are The Champions, all of them are in that bar, basically, and then he was, stand up if we've won 4-0, and they were all singing along to that and having a beer. If you're going to show that to anybody in terms of inspiration for an English player, whether it's Zach Crawley, Ollie Pope, whoever, to actually grit your teeth, be better in 4 years' time and get that urn back on foreign soil. Showing people something like that, it's got to be the incentive. I remember talking to Craig White. Yorkshire had lost a semi-final at Scarborough. I think it was against Essex, actually, your boys. And Essex were all singing in their dressing room. And Chalky looked at me and he says, I hate this. He says, I hate losing and hearing the opposition sing like that. It just sticks in your throat. That's got to stick in people's throats, Mark, hasn't it? The Aussies singing, that's got to be put right, hasn't it?
Well, you'd hope so. You'd hope so, but they're probably too busy playing Call of Duty or whatever to notice. But you would hope so, and you would hope that they have got enough about them to want to put things right. You know, top-level sport, we talked about technique a lot in this podcast, and coaches, rightly so. But top-level sport and top-level sports people have very strong mentalities. You look at all the best sports people if you look at, listen to the interview, I know you don't like it, but listen to the interview by Cristiano Ronaldo last week on situation at Manchester United. You know, you can see it in the top people. They have the right mentalities. If you haven't got that mentality, then you're not going to achieve. So we need those people with strong mentalities to go with good techniques. So you hope they're getting angry and you hope they're going to put it right. And you hope we got that determination, yes.
Got to use that as motivation, Phil, any?
I certainly would. I'll tell you what would set me off was Boland's pointing at the stumps at Root when he just bowled him, screaming at him as he runs past him. I tell you what, that would have set my teeth on edge.
You'd have ended up suspended by wrapping your bat around him.
I have to say, and it would probably have been worth it because I have to say I thought that was shithousery of an unnecessary level from a team that had already crushed us. Bearing in mind, it was the pitch. It wasn't even him. It was the pitch.
I was commentating on that, and we actually said, because Scott Boland had been quite understated, I think, all the way through the series in the three games he'd played. He'd never looked to be too brash or egotistical. He just seemed to be enjoying himself and, you know, as I say, understated. At that moment, he actually burst out of his shell. He'd taken the prize scalp. I could understand him being excited by that, Phil, but if it had been you, he'd have basically hit the deck, I guess.
Maybe.
That's Phil suspended for 3 years from test match duty. Then, if anybody from the ECB is listening, even if it's just a hypothetical situation, it's a hypothetical suspension.
Gentlemen,
it's been a terrific series. It's still the Ashes. It's still cricket. And it's been good to watch. It's just a shame it wasn't very competitive. I thank you, Mark. I thank you, Phil, for joining me. And I thank everybody else for being part of this and for watching as we've gone through the Ashes. And we'll be back as well. We'll come back ahead of the, I think we're going to do an IPL auction one. We'll jump in with an IPL auction and reaction to the people that get bought and sold at that, and then we'll come back for England in the West Indies, which is not too far away now, start of March, isn't it, for England in the West Indies. So we'll come back and see how England bounce back from their Ashes woes and their Ashes defeat. We'll see who the personnel are, and we'll see if our sackings, our hirings and firings have actually had any bite and any if it's actually had any effect on the decisions that are made. Phil, Mark, thank you very much. Thanks everybody for watching. Hopefully you've enjoyed the Ashes pods as we've gone through, and we will talk to you very soon indeed. Cheers all.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.